Our next guest today has to deal with, or I mean, she has to deal, but she chooses to deal with an area that probably none of us really want to have happen. Poison. Ever been poisoned for anything? I've had some food poisoning. I don't think I've ever had any chemical poisoning. I might have and didn't really know it. But Donna Lotzer is with us to talk about poisonings and how they can span a lifetime. Donna's a senior clinical pharmacist. She's a poison education coordinator at the UW Hospital, poison prevention and education center in Madison. And she comes by every once in a while to talk with us about this topic. And certainly as we get into this time of the year, we're sort of out of one a set of scenarios that often happen during the winter and probably coming into a whole new set of scenarios for the spring as it relates to poisonings. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Got a question or an experience to share? We'd love to hear from you. And Donna, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you. Anybody can be a victim of poisoning, I guess.
Boy, I'm afraid so. A lot of times we think about small children, since the age group 5 and under are probably the highest in terms of just total exposures to poisons. However, older adults frequently make mistakes with their medicines, can't read small labels in the dark, or mix things they ought not to. And so adults can get into poisonings when they don't expect it also.
Yeah. And so sometimes it's not just what we might normally think of as poisons that to create problems.
Correct. You can have household cleaners, which people would normally say, okay, let's stay away from.
Yeah.
But what about food that managed to get to the back of your fridge and now it's, you know, getting fuzzy or different colored? Food poisoning can make you ill. Medicines, of course.
Medicines. That was the one that was on my mind. If you take the wrong ones at the wrong time, or
if you mix the wrong thing, or you take an extra dose, or even if you've forgotten to take a dose and then try to make it up, you could run into problems.
What are the most let's talk about kids for small children for a bit. What are the most likely situations where a small child can be poisoned?
Well, you know, small kids, number one, can't read labels.
Right.
And number two, they're just endlessly curious. And so they're going to check out everything with their hands and their mouth. So whether it happens to be a pretty mushroom or a berry growing outside, or whether it's they're looking in somebody's purse for candy and they find a bottle of pills instead, or whether they see a brightly colored container of liquid, they may think it's juice and it could be windshield washer fluid, or it could be lamp oil or something that could be very toxic to them.
And probably all you've had to deal with all those experiences over your career.
Oh, boy. I answered emergency calls for 25 years, and I have many, many stories that I certainly could tell.
Well, what do you do in these cases when a youngster, swallows the lamp oil?
Well, the first thing to do is not panic. The second thing to do is know that you do have a number you can call 24/7 where you will get immediate help and assistance, and that would be the Poison Center. There's one phone number. It works anywhere in the country. Extends to the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico and other exotic locations. Mm-hmm. And it's 800-222-1222.
So it's pretty easy to remember.
It's very easy to remember. I tell people to program it into their cell phones so that if you're on the road someplace, if you're on vacation and you need help, you've always got that number right there.
So it's 800-222-1222.
Correct.
All right. Well, let's go to Mary in Stockbridge. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about the toxicity of a lot of new artificial fragrances that are being developed and introduced out there in the world. Do you know anything about those, like the new for air plug-ins, or and they often come in these little oil containers now. I have a grandson who seems to be extremely sensitive to these in terms of triggering asthma attacks, and I was wondering if there are any other problems associated with these.
My guess would be that if it's being, you know, projected into the air and then he reacts, irritation to the throat or to the lungs might be possible, especially if he's right on top of the unit when it, you know, discharges.
Right.
So, I mean, if he's having breathing difficulties, it could also be a sensitivity to the fragrance, the perfume, you know, the same as people would get from a cologne or perfume that you would put on your skin. So it might be worth, depending on how old the child is, you know, talking to his physician or seeing if he needs to see a specialist. That would be different from somebody who accidentally, you know, opened the container and drank the material.
Sure.
Where you might worry about them choking on it or something.
Okay. Yeah, it's confusing to me because the fragrance ingredients of the fragrance are protected. They don't have to list them. So
yeah,
we weren't really sure if it might follow him through other areas in his life.
And that I'm not sure. But again, if his symptoms are simulating, you know, shortness of breath or asthma type things, it might be worthwhile to talk with a specialist who may have seen other children or other, you know, people with the same symptoms.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. And take some more calls here. Let's go to Gene in Oshkosh. Gene, hello to you.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, guest.
Good morning.
This is appropriate. I was just driving back from the pharmacy. I had recently, within the last 4 to 5 weeks, suffered every side effect, the small print on the directions that accompany prescriptions.
Yes.
Read that stuff, because everything bad that could have happened literally happened to me. My right, it was an antibiotic, Levaquin. It has a long history of very serious side effects, and it reached the point where inflammations of the legs, the muscles, excruciating pain, and then finally it drove my heart into fibrillation. So I had to be cardioverted, all because I took an antibiotic under doctor's prescription for a simple sinus infection.
Wow.
As a pharmacist, I dispense that drug when I work in retail.
Yes.
And there is a fairly long list of side effects. Usually I try to go over as many of those as I can, you know, and then patients, of course, should also be getting a written sheet such as what you're describing. But unfortunately, you know, it's hard to predict who might have no problem, minor problem, or in your case, a major problem ahead of time. There's no way to know who might have those difficulties. It's just known that they can exist.
Well, perhaps for drugs that do have a record of serious side effects, there might be some direction given perhaps by the pharmacist that the patient read the fine print rather carefully. Because I hadn't until after all these things happened, and everything that happened to me was mentioned in those side effects.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes the doctor who's prescribing it for you also, you know, should be going over that sort of information. But
Yeah.
He was rather cavalier even after I informed him of it.
Well, that's not
that's
a good
unfortunate.
Thing. That is unfortunate. Thanks, Gene, for calling. And it's and he brings up a really good point. And most of us don't. Well, I shouldn't say most of us. Many of us do not take the time always to read the fine print. But I do have to say that when, on at least on in terms of medication or medicines, if I go to the pharmacy and pick something up, the pharmacist almost always goes through. Well, in fact, always does, goes through it unless I've had the medicine in a previous time. They'll still ask me if I had any side effects or you know, anything that I need to know about the drug.
Well, the problem now is that more and more people, especially older adults, are being forced to get their medicines by mail, and so they don't talk to a pharmacist. Their doctor orders the drug. It comes by mail. There may be some printed information that they toss out with the rest of the packaging.
Yeah.
And then they don't have any clue whatsoever what they're doing or what the side effects might be. And they don't have the advantage of a pharmacist consult, you know, right there in their community. So
we have an email from Sue in Winneconne. And she says, when I was growing up, I was born in 1973. My mom and dad had Mr. Yuck stickers.
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to those? Why did they disappear? And is there any opportunity of them becoming available or even something similar?
Mr. Yuck is still alive and well and living in Wisconsin, as a matter of fact. Mr. Yuck was invented by the Pittsburgh Poison Center in 1971. So if you were born in 74?
73.
Mm-hmm. You were indeed a wee tot when he came around. But you can get Mr. Yuck stickers by calling the Poison Center. And the Poison Center for Wisconsin is in Milwaukee at Children's Hospital. And if you dial that 800-222-1222 and simply tell them that you don't have an emergency, you simply want Mr. Yuck stickers, they will route you to the appropriate person. Or you can go online to wisconsinpoison.org, and there is an order form, and you can get those stickers for yourself now.
And what's the email address again?
The web address.
Our web address is, excuse me.
wisconsinpoison.org.
Wisconsinpoison.org.
Maybe okay. We should explain. Mr. Yuck stickers are used to put on potential poisons in the house in the hope that it would deter kids or keep kids from getting into the item with that sticker on it.
Yeah, and Mr. Yuck looks like pretty yucky, too. I mean, he looks like he's...
He's mean and green.
He looks scowling. Like he's just had something that was kind of yucky,
yes.
as a matter of fact. Oh, man. Talking poisons today, and poisoning spanning a lifetime, with our guest Donna Lotzer, who is a senior clinical pharmacist at the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center in Madison. And she'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or via email at talk@wpr.org. Larry Mehler here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Net as we talk about poisonings spanning a lifetime with Donna Lotzer, senior clinical pharmacist, poison education coordinator for the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center in Madison. Give us a call with your questions or comments or maybe experiences. We'd like to hear those too. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And I just, the emergency number to call, the 800 number, is 800-222-1222. I just put that up on my Larry Mehler Show Facebook page. So I did that over the newscast, so we've got that. Mr. Yuck has come up and Mr. Yuck, I guess, could be okay if used properly, but it's not always used properly, is it, Donna?
Correct. Sometimes we run into problems. If I give those stickers out at displays or programs, parents tend to put them like on the child as a positive reinforcement, which is, of course, the wrong message to use those stickers for. They should be put on household chemicals or other poisons, a can of gasoline, the antifreeze, laundry bleach, and then teach the child to stay away from items that have those scowling green stickers on them. The good part of it is Mr. Yuck stickers also have the phone number for the poison center. So if something accidentally happens, the number's right there.
There's the number's right there.
Yeah.
Mary in Oshkosh, hello to you.
Hello. I have a question. Back in the 50s, when I was a kid, we got into a jar of mercury, and my friends proceeded to smear it all over me. I was going to be the Tin Man of the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a lot of health effects. The kids that were with me that smeared it on me, the two of them have passed away already. At the time, my teeth had all loosened up, and my hair was falling out. And, of course, back then, they didn't know what was wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mercury poisoning can occur from, skin exposure, as you described, but also the material, once it came off your skin, because obviously it didn't stick to you, would have dropped to the floor, the carpet, the furniture, and then slowly gone from the liquid, shiny metal form into an invisible vapor form. Which could have remained in the room, in the house, in whatever area you were in for a very, very long time. So it's not like you got a one-time exposure on your skin. There could have been a chronic exposure by inhalation to you and anyone else who was in that area where the mercury had been spilled. Mm. Nowadays, there's very strict, descriptions of cleanup methods, things to do, things to not do. Most people nowadays don't have access to mercury. We've all gotten rid of our mercury thermometers. Even doctor's offices don't have the mercury blood pressure cuffs anymore most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So exposures aren't as common, but certainly mercury can cause both acute and chronic health effects that a physician would probably spend quite a bit of time helping you sort out.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, Mary, we got an email as well from Julie, who was living with her parents and had to take her son's temperature with a mercury thermometer that was about 20 years old, and she was shaking it. It slipped, and some of it went down the drain. Some of it went on the floor, and I picked it up and threw it in the garbage, the mercury. I'm just worried about this incident. It happened 8 years ago, roughly.
Oh.
But she's wondering if it could be causing poor health, or is there something that she should do? And so this kind of goes along with what Mary's.
Right.
Only probably not to the same level as of Mary's.
The mercury in a fever thermometer is about one drop.
Mm.
However, again, when it hits the ground, hits a solid surface, it can go into cracks in the floor. You know, it can get into soft fabrics and what have you, and it goes into literally microscopic-sized pieces and then again evaporates into the air. It wouldn't be I mean, there's nothing I would know that could be done 8 years later or 50 years later or something like that. But, you know, an occupational toxicologist or a physician who has a specialty in that area, you know, might be able to shed some light on, mm-hmm. on problems that might still be able to be looked for.
Okay. Mary, I'm sorry.
You know, you might, I mean, could call the folks at the Poison Center. They do have a medical director.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps ask if they would have somebody they could refer you to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might be worth it.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay.
Tough question.
Well, got what I got.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Helen, who's on the road. Let's go to Helen. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I was wondering, I worked in home care as a nurse for many, many years, and many of our patients would have medications that they literally had for generations. Do any medications become toxic with age, or do they just lose their potency?
The answer to that would be a qualified yes to both.
Oh, okay.
There are some drugs. The one that immediately comes to mind are drugs in the tetracycline family, antibiotics, which can actually break down to potentially toxic chemicals that would be harmful to the kidneys. The great majority of drugs simply lose potency over time, but again, certainly wouldn't be recommended to take. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I clean out my parents' medicine cabinets and shoeboxes on a regular basis, and I swear the stuff just grows overnight. The best thing to do, of course, especially these days, is not to throw the stuff out where it goes into the landfill and our groundwater and what have you. But if you can, save the stuff. Look for a medication disposal event.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Milwaukee area does them. Madison has done a number of them. Other areas have done them where you can bring the medicine in, turn it in to a group that collects the stuff, and then it gets, you know, legally, properly disposed of, usually by incineration.
Sure. Another comment I just have to make mm-hmm. is the number of confused people that I've seen that are taking both the generic and the brand name
on their medicines.
Oh boy!
Sometimes that can happen in people of all ages, whether it's parents giving something to their child or whether it's an adult taking it for themselves. And you can mix up stuff from a prescription, for example, pain reliever, to over-the-counter stuff. People may not realize that their pain reliever, for example, may contain acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, and a lot of sleep aids that you buy over the counter, a great number of cough and cold products that you buy over the counter contain that same ingredient. And so you can duplicate without intending to do so and possibly have some serious consequences.
Yeah. Mm.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Helen, for calling. Jim from La Crosse wants to know when poison is ingested, when do you drink water to dilute the virus, dilute it, versus when do you sort of regurgitate the or get the person to throw it up?
Excellent question, and I'm sure many people out there have heard, used, or seen little bottles of Ipecac syrup that used to be everywhere. It'd be in your home first aid kit. It would be in the doctor's office. It would be in the hospitals and what have you. Ipecac was used to make people forcibly vomit or throw up. It's no longer recommended. It's no longer to be kept in the house. You won't find it in the doctor's offices anymore. And forcibly vomiting is just not a method that is normally used to treat a potential poisoning anymore. As far as dilution, if a person can swallow, isn't choking or having trouble breathing or already vomiting, sips of fluid, whether it's water, milk, or what have you, are certainly okay. But you want to make sure that they are able to swallow. There's some products like drain cleaners or dishwasher detergent, which might cause the person to vomit, which you don't want them to do. So dilution is okay. Call the poison center as you're doing it or right after you do it to get further advice, though.
So now why would you not want them to throw up? Is it
Several reasons. One being after many, many years, toxicologists went back and did studies and looked at the published material saying, you know, this really doesn't help much with the final outcome of most poisonings. So if it's not effective, and it was also being used, Ipecac was, when it was supposedly going to teach a child a lesson.
Oh.
So it was being used inappropriately, or it was being used when the exposure was actually harmless. Mm. So the person was vomiting when they didn't need to be.
Okay.
So
Terry in Fort Atkinson, on to you now. Hi, Terry.
Good morning. Thanks for your programs, as always. This might be more an occupational type question. I'm a paint contractor, and I have a lot of people when working in their homes. Obviously, the fumes and paints are not pleasant, but with the new latex paints and all the new green paints, the absorption of those in use when you're breathing and or on your skin, is there any problems with that? I mean, I have windows open all the time, and unless I absolutely positively have to, do not use solvent-based products at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I see people ask questions about that. Is there what's the toxic levels of things like that if you're breathing them? Because in the winter, I can't open windows and things. And what's the
questions
of that? So.
And to be honest, each container of whatever you're using, be it paint, varnish, urethane, you know, water sealer or what have you, is going to have different chemical compositions.
Correct.
And so I don't know. I don't have a way to give a single answer to that question.
Right.
Most of the time, if people are being exposed enough that they get headaches, that's a pretty good first warning that whatever is in that product, you're probably getting exposed to a bit too much.
Right.
Eye, nose, and throat irritation would be another good early warning symptom. That means, okay, we need to ventilate better, or I need to take a break and get some fresh air.
Right.
So headache, eye, nose, and throat irritation would be early signs before anything else. But I really don't know. I can't answer specifics. Again, okay. If you've got a specific product, you know, you could call the poison center. You could try the manufacturer of the product and try
right.
to get some information.
Well, they say like a lot of new green products now are safe, et cetera,
right.
and things like that. But I don't, what they mean by safe is
right.
yeah.
the environment or to yourself or to land or...
Yeah.
And again, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right, great. Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling. Again, that number you could call, though, is 800-222-1222, and they may have some more information about specific products. At least they'd probably be in the same boat that you're in. You know, it's sort of a general comment, but with specifics they could look up.
Correct.
And let's take another email. I'm Karen in Cornell, Wisconsin, says, I'm concerned about lead-based glazes being used on dishes and coffee cups manufactured in China. My concern has increased since the problems with children's toys with lead paint. Any real concern, and are these items tested for lead before being imported? I like my coffee and hot liquids are bound to leach more lead than cold liquids would.
And I don't know the testing procedures in terms of ceramic and those types of products. It's possible that there could be a lead content. I mean, one would hope not, but then again, you hope they wouldn't be found in your kids' toys either.
Yeah.
There are some places like in the hardware stores and what have you that you can purchase home lead testing kits. They're usually a little swab, and you open it up, and there's a liquid, and you wipe it over the item, and if it changes pink or it changes a different color, that's sort of a presumptive sign that there could be lead content. As far as acidic products, you know, I mean, there are products like lead crystal where you know it has a 40% lead content, and people are warned pretty consistently about not storing liquids in a decanter or other item. Don't put food into items that are lead crystal because the lead can migrate into the food or liquid. And an acidic product, for example, orange juice, would be more likely to leach the lead than would a non-acidic product. But as far as specific testing of an individual item, it may be cost prohibitive to be able to do that.
Yeah. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org as we talk poisons and what to do about them with Donna Lotzer of the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center. Donna, you were telling me off air about some YouTube information, some information out on YouTube, some videos relating to poisons.
I just found this out this morning that if you go to, it's the www.youtube.com/AAPCC, you will find videos that are developed by poison centers. Several of them are meant for adults. At least one of them is meant for small kids. It features cartoon characters. And one of them probably would be more interesting to the teenage. But I wasn't aware of this. These are new, and they've been posted by the National Poison Organization. So youtube.com/AAPCC. And this will give a quick and easy lesson in poison prevention in anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes.
So it's youtube.com/AAPCC. Is
correct.
That correct? Two A's and two and a P and then two C's.
Correct.
Okay. I have to look that up. I haven't seen it myself yet, so that'll be interesting. We have more callers online, and so let's take some more calls. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Fred in Eau Claire, we're on to you now. Hi, Fred. Thank you for calling.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have a question. It's probably pretty unique. 20-some years ago, I was exposed to uranium oxide, which is fuel for a nuclear reactor. And, you know, they didn't have laws quite as strict as they do now for people that work. I was cleaning up hazardous waste with the company, and I wondered if our guest could tell us anything about that type of exposure.
Uranium oxide.
Absolutely no help whatsoever, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, man.
I'm not even sure if the Poison Center could handle that, but again, you might try checking with them.
It might be worth it just for peace of mind, if nothing else. So it's 800-222-1222.
And they'll hate me for that one.
Well, you know, that's what they're there for,
yeah, right.
Uranium
oxide. If nothing
oxide.
Else, they may be able to make a referral.
Yep.
All right. I appreciate it. Okay, as I get older and my bones start to creak, I always wonder if that had anything to do with it. So.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. And Pam and Marshall, your turn. Hi, Pam.
Hi, I'm the eldest of six. And we were young. Every Sunday we would go to work with my dad. He worked at a chemical company. It was a very small one. And we would play on the bags of the chemicals that they used to make mosquito spray with and so forth. And all four of us, the older ones, would watch when he would mix up the chemicals together. And we would go on the truck with him. We sprayed for mosquitoes and run back in the fog of it and so forth. I'm just surprised we're not all dead.
Well, you know, the chemicals that would have been available in the time historically that you're talking about are probably not the same ones at all that are available today. And so therefore, you know, it would be really, really hard to project back as far as what to expect as from an exposure like that. But I have seen people even recently trying to spray things like their apple trees, and they will mix up a container of a chemical and stand directly underneath the tree. And then they will spray upwards into the tree and douse themselves with a chemical.
Yeah.
So misuse of a pesticide, be it to kill bugs or weeds or what have you, is something that happens all the time. The consequences, you know, would have to be predicted based on what the ingredients were in the bug spray or in the weed killer or what have you. Back when you're talking about it, it could have been a chemical called lindane, which actually is still found in prescription topical lice products, is or was, but, you know, wouldn't be found in any commercial products today for killing mosquitoes, I don't believe.
Yeah, it was almost 60 years ago.
Right. So there'd be no way to know what the chemical was,
right,
at this time.
Boy, amazing how we lived through it all, isn't it, Pam?
It is. I can't believe it. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Well, another caller says she called the phone number, mm-hmm, about the Mr. Yuck, and they said they're not carrying them now, but they did say that people can find the stickers at www.wisconsinpoison.org.
That's the website, and that's how you order it, you know, through their order form online. We don't have that caller on the line, do we?
No,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Because this brings up a point. The phone number is a national phone number. In other words, you dial it from anywhere in the country. But if the person dialing that number might have gotten, depending on where their phone is originating and when their cell phone carrier is originating from, could have gotten a poison center other than the one in Wisconsin. So, for example, if I was in Arizona and dialed that toll-free phone number, I would get the Arizona Poison Center, and Arizona may not use Mr. Yuck.
I got
And if you. I had a phone in Arizona and tried to call and reach Milwaukee, I might not get Milwaukee. So I'm not sure who they got.
Yeah.
If they've stopped the stickers, that's a fairly recent thing I wasn't aware of.
Okay. Camille in Frankfurt, we are on to you now. Hi. Oops. Just a minute. Let's go to Camille here. I pushed the wrong button. There's Camille. Hi, Camille. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I recently went to the... hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, there you are. Yeah, I recently went to the dentist, and I expressed my concern about mercury fillings, and he said, yes, of course, you know, we don't do it the way we used to. And then later, at another appointment, I got a filling, and I assumed that it didn't have mercury in it. But I learned that, in fact, it did. It still has mercury in it. And so the dental hygienist told me that, well, it's done differently today and that the mercury can't leach out. And I'm wondering if you know anything about that.
I don't know, you know, from a procedural standpoint, what they may be doing different. I mean, I have a mouth, unfortunately, full of fillings. Mm-hmm. Some of them are old, some of them are new. Many, many years ago, people actually went to the extremes of having their fillings taken out because of concerns over mercury. And then there was some pretty good scientific work done that proved that mercury was not leaching from dental fillings in amounts sufficient to make people ill. So that whole thing kind of quieted down. But as far as the procedural part of how your dentist is doing the fillings now versus historically, I think you probably would need to go back to them and try to press them and get a little bit more detail as far as how they are doing the fillings now versus historically.
They've been keeping pretty good track, I think, in research. And I know, right, the dentists that I have on my show are all saying people should not worry about mercury.
Correct.
in fillings. So... and of course, if you don't want mercury in fillings, there are other materials that they can use.
Right. They say they're not as durable sometimes or what have you, but yeah, there are alternative materials that can be used.
And I want to go back to that number again, just because thanks again for calling, Camille. We're out of time here, but Donna, the number, emergency number to call is 800-222-1222. I put it up on my Facebook page during the program, just as we were talking during the newscast. And so keep that number, you know, put it in your cell phone. Have it handy.
You bet.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks.
Donna Lotzer is senior clinical pharmacist at the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center. Thank you for listening.